Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Hello everyone, and welcome to Pixels, which is a show where we try to gather the entirety of the news in the gaming industry from the past couple of weeks, and we serve it back to you on a wonderful platter from which you can just pick and choose. Well, you can't really choose. We serve everything we chose. And the most important news, and hopefully that allows you to get an overview of everything important that's happened, and you get a little bit of analysis of all of this, and as if that deal wasn't good enough already, you get hopefully a couple of chuckles and a little bit of fun out of the show. My name is Patrick Beja, and to help me gather the news and recite it to you with analysis is the amazing James Bartolomeu. How is it going, James?
It's going very well, Patrick. Thanks so much for having me again today. There's some cool stuff going on in gaming right now.
There is. And some mildly infuriating stuff as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
As we'll see. You noticed I used the qualifier amazing to introduce you.
Yes,
that's because you are amazing. So
thank you.
There you go. All right. In gaming, we're going to be talking about Konami in kind of a sequel to what we discussed in the episode from 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. We're going to be talking about Castlevania and stuff like that. Assassin's Creed, the next installment has been announced. Good old games, The Witcher, a whole bunch of stuff. Results, financial results from from all of the big players. So there's a lot to dive into. And let's start immediately with Konami. Those who listened to the previous episode will remember that we discussed at length our thoughts on what Konami was thinking, canceling the one of their most anticipated title, Silent Hills, and, you know, following the separation with Kojima, Hideo Kojima, instigator of the Metal Gear series. And we posited, or at least I wondered, what that meant for the company. And I went as far as to suggest they might be actually leaving the game industry entirely. Because, of course, I wouldn't really know, but, and I don't think that's a very likely, I didn't think it was a very likely scenario, but it was one that what they had done in the past few days and weeks put into the realm of possibilities.
Yeah.
And it seems I was kind of half right, kind of. So what happened is, on a few days later, I think about a week ago, we had the CEO of Konami answer a few questions. And one of them was, what is Konami doing with gaming and the mobile industry and the not mobile industry, the console industry? And so Mr. Hayakawa, Hideki Hayakawa, said basically that they are going to be, they're not going to be getting out of gaming as a whole, but there's definitely going to be focusing on mobile games and in gaming, which you know, for Konami, unlike what I thought, gaming is still a significant portion of their revenue. Actually, it's their the majority of their revenue. Mm-hmm. But it's very much mobile gaming. And he mentioned things like Metal Gear and even the potential Silent Hills, the big titles. He mentioned that they were Western games, which was a little bit of a surprise for me. I guess Japanese gamers have really shifted away from at least Konami's big console games, and they're making a lot more money on mobile, and that is what they are going to be focused on going forward. So it's not like I was, you know, I was right on the money with the Konami mm-hmm. might be getting out of gaming, but they're certainly shifting gears dramatically by focusing on gaming. It seems, we don't know exactly, but it seems almost exclusively. And that was, I mean, that's a shock.
Yeah. I mean, so what I've looked at is that it looks like while gaming makes them a lot of money in the West, the Japanese stuff is a lot of it is gambling, like pachinko machines. And them moving to mobile kind of makes sense there, because that, you know, you can get that same addictive gameplay in the I guess with him saying it's Western market, he can that's what they want to focus on here is the bigger games. But going to mobile makes sense in Japan with the gambling that they like, and the you know, I'm not sure how to say it, the
mechanics of mobile games are sometimes a little bit akin to gambling, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, yeah. We've heard a little bit more about this in conferences about mobile gaming. We've heard developers bemoan the fact that it was now a lot of people coming from the gambling world, because there are some of the same mechanics apply mm-hmm. for some of the mobile games. And I mean, Nevada passed a law only a few days ago allowing quote unquote skill based gambling machines. So, and so that is something that Konami was very happy about. They've been very vocal about the fact that this was a good thing for them. And yeah, I guess, I mean, in Japan, it's definitely mobile gaming, period, that is their cash cow at the moment. But yeah, there is some similarity to gambling more and more, how to get people to spend as much money as possible within the context of that game. There are, you know, there are good and bad mobile games, but yeah, I don't know. It leaves a very sour taste in my mouth.
Me too.
You're probably a bit too young to really have enjoyed the old school Konami games.
I've played Castlevania, and I've played Devil May Cry. I've played those games, but
Devil May Cry is Capcom.
That you are correct. Sorry. Contra,
Gradius, and Contra. Yeah. Oh my God, Contra. Okay, so you're not that young.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, Devil May Cry, definitely Capcom. That's really embarrassing.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, Konami is, it's a bit sad. It's a bit sad, I think.
Yeah. I mean, what makes me even sadder is that it scares me at what's going to happen to their big franchises. I mean, are we going to be getting Contra slot machines, or are we going to be getting? I mean, they've got loads of IPs that aren't being used right now, and what's going to happen to those?
It's, yeah, and we'll get to that in just a minute, and another interesting echo to our last episode, but there's another thing I wanted to mention. There was something that made a little bit of noise with Konami trying to suppress a video on YouTube that was trying to explore the reason behind the split between Konami and Kojima.
Yeah.
And they tried to suppress it. Obviously, they used the bogus
DMCA.
Pretext.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, a pretext using the DMCA of, like, there was 27 seconds of game footage at the end of the video. But it's like Konami is actively trying to be a hated company right now. Del Toro also mentioned that he was very disappointed and surprised by Konami's approach of the cancellation of the you know, Silent Hills and the entire removal of the playable teaser that is now not available on the PlayStation Store, even if you had downloaded it previously. You can't re-download it. So don't erase it from your hard drives, people. But I don't know. I don't know what Konami is doing. I think they don't care. They're just done with traditional gaming, and it's not their business anymore.
Yeah. It leads me to a question that I had. I mean, just as I know that you were working in PR before, I don't understand how people don't understand the Streisand effect with what happens when you remove something like this.
Yeah.
You know?
I think this was definitely somewhat of a mistake. They realized too late, you know, that they shouldn't have done this. Or maybe it was some higher up who said, I don't care, just get it off the internet, without understanding what that was going to lead to. Mm-hmm. But especially since they couldn't keep it off the internet, even the actual video, they didn't have any legitimate reason for asking for its removal. It was more than fair use and, you know, critique of it was a work of journalism. But I don't, I just think that they really just don't care anymore. They're just out of this market and whatever. It's not something they care about.
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely seems like it's just like we're pulling out the industry, so we'll just completely go scorched earth. We're just out of here. Yeah. Do as much damage as we can and then not really care about what happens afterwards.
Which is strange. It's definitely, there's some kind of dissonance there. Yeah. It's also, I mean, we'll see what happens at E3. I don't see what could be introduced or talked about at E3. Probably, you know, Metal Gear Solid 5 is going to be discussed, but I don't know. I also wouldn't be surprised if Kojima resurfaced somewhere, somehow, but we'll see. Yeah. And talking about resurfacing, another thing we were saying in the previous episode was how the love we have for Castlevania. And lo and behold, a few days after the episode was released, there's a Kickstarter project by Koji Igarashi, who is basically the creator of the Castlevania series. And He went to Kickstarter and said, we have a new project. It was very cheeky, very well done. It was basically Igarashi playing vampire in this presentation video, in this dark castle. And he was talking to the camera and saying everything he wanted to do with this new game called Bloodstained. And it's funny because I've said more than once on this show that I'm a little bit tired of the nostalgia gaming Kickstarter trend where, you know, creators from old games that aren't very successful at this stage, or that big publishers don't want to back anymore, go to Kickstarter and get a game launched. And I'm like, well, okay, that's cool, but I wish there were more, you know, new original things on, yeah, original work. And certainly there is some, but obviously it doesn't have the draw because the people don't have anything to refer to when they look at those projects. But and so I saw this and it played me like a violin. Mm-hmm. It was like, you know, exactly what we were saying in the previous episode. Like, oh, I wish I could play a modern Castlevania. Konami has such powerful IPs and brands, and they could do something with those memories that we have. And it just did. That Kickstarter project was exactly that. So of course, yeah, I went ahead and backed it immediately, and shamelessly renounced everything I had been saying. Well, not quite. It's not like I hate those types of Kickstarters, yeah, but so I went ahead and pledged $28, which is the minimum you have to pledge to get a digital version of the game. And of course, and the thing is a roaring success. It's at its initial goal was $500,000. It's now past 2.3 million with 25 days to go. So it wouldn't be surprising that it goes past 3 million. And I think the Kickstarter project was pretty well put together. Basically, they have a huge amount of engagement and different milestones that don't only have to do with the amount of money they get, but also with the amount of retweets and Facebook fans and all of that. Yeah. And they're very open about the fact that they are doing the Kickstarter to prove there's interest in the game so that their backers, their corporate finance will follow, because if there is enough interest, they're going to get the actual money they need from the serious editors and publishers. So, absolutely. And they said it's going to be available in 2 years. The only thing we have is an idea and a couple of pieces of concept art and a kick-ass team. And it's going to take 2 years to make it at a minimum. So, you know, they're very, very open. I think they've learned a lot of the lessons of the Kickstarter pitfalls. And yes. I think it's pretty well done.
Yeah.
So are you a backer? Are you in?
I'm not, but I'm definitely thinking about it. I'm not sure how I feel about backing Kickstarters, just because I've got so much to play now and that more stuff comes anyway, that backing stuff just gives me more to play. But I think I will back this, just because I know that Igarashi has been wanting to make a new game for ages and he hasn't done anything that's not... hasn't led anything properly in a while. I know that it's all been... he's been kind of like just off in the side, just playing with Castlevania
stuff. He's been doing other stuff, not as a project lead.
Yeah. And I might support it just for the fact that it's, you know, he gets to do what he wants to do and supporting the... but it's not surprising that this launched right as this Konami stuff was going off. It's like he thought, oh, Konami going down the drain. If I do this right now, I can play on that fact that Konami are being... nasty, and I will get that sympathetic stuff. Like,
yeah, it's possible. I mean, it seems like they had been working on it for a very long time, but it wouldn't be surprising if they said, all right, we wanted to launch it, you know, in a month, but let's do it now. Maybe they wanted to do it closer to E3 or something. I don't know.
Yeah, just like, and striking while the hammer's hot, you know, just getting in.
Yeah, very, very possible. Talking about the potential issues with the game, I realized as I was pressing the keys to enter my credit card number in the backing thing, it's like I completely understand this might not turn out well, but it's kind of the pleasure of Kickstarter is also sort of buying into the dream. And, you know, it's buying hope, basically. And it's okay if that ends up not materializing. I think I said on Twitter, paying $28 to buy a dream is not that much money.
No.
So I'm okay with it. I wouldn't do it for any game. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't do it for most games, actually. But I think from time to time, if it's something that really, really resonates with you, I think it's very understandable, and that definitely was the case for me. It was such, you know, it was like the week before I was bemoaning the lack of updated, renewed vision for a Castlevania game. And it's okay if that game gets made and sells, I don't know, you know, 50,000, 100,000 copies. It doesn't have to be a multi-million seller. Currently, there are 30,000 contributors. Let's say he does 10 times this in sales, 300,000 copies. It's a good amount of money for a team. It's not something necessarily that would warrant the immediate backing of a publisher, but it's okay for the project as it stands. So,
yeah, and also I think that if that happens and it shows that there's people want, I mean, it has already shown that people want Castlevania games. It also show that more people, it will show that a game like that can be successful and more developers will start making them.
I really think that Kickstarter is kind of finding its stride, and project creators are understanding how it works and what to expect from it. And so, yeah, it's good. It's good. Bloodstained. I can't wait for 2017, which is a long time from now. It's going to be 2018 at the minimum. So,
yeah,
we'll see. What else? Assassin's Creed is coming October 21st in a splash of surprising news. Ubisoft announced that there was a new Assassin's Creed coming out. Are you surprised?
It's amazing. I'm very surprised that their annual game is coming. do you care that another Assassin's Creed game is coming?
I don't know. When my voice gets high like this, it probably means that I don't really care all that much. But, you know, I loved the environment of Assassin's Creed Unity. And Assassin's Creed Syndicate, which is the name for what was codenamed Assassin's Creed Victory, for the Victorian London type of game that this is going to be. I think they spent Assassin's Creed Unity creating a graphical engine and sort of getting acquainted with the new consoles. And I have some hope that Syndicate is going to be a maturing of that process and the real iteration of the Assassin's Creed franchise on the current generation of consoles.
Okay. So think that this would be the Assassin's Creed 4 to Unity's Assassin's Creed 3?
I don't know. Maybe. I want to hope that it's going to be better. I'm not a huge Assassin's Creed fan. I think there's an opportunity there for sure. However, given how little the game has evolved over the past 5 years or 6 years, I think reasonably we shouldn't expect too much.
No.
But, you know, there are some gameplay elements, like there's a grappling hook, there's the possibility of going into carriages and play Grand Theft Victorian London, essentially. You know, horse carriages that you can get onto them and just travel through the city and wreck everything. So that might be a little bit fun. I don't know. I think the thing that is giving me the most hope is, I don't know if you saw the entire video, but there was a portion where they were owning up to the mess that Assassin's Creed Unity was. Did you see that part?
I did.
What did you think?
I think it's bizarre. I mean, it's good to see that they're you know, acknowledging that Unity was graphically not working, and it was, you know, it was a broken game, but it seems like a weird way to get back that goodwill. Because, I mean, you saying that your game is messed up doesn't really help me once I've paid the $60 for the AAA game. It doesn't make me feel any better, you know?
No, I see what you mean. As someone who has purchased the game, I guess it's a way for them to say that they're sorry, first of all, again, because they've said it before.
Yeah.
And I think it's a way of saying, yes, we know this was a terrible F up, and we will not do this again. And it impacted us. You know, we realized it. It's not easy when you're a developer and you put out your baby into the world and it becomes the laughing stock of the internet. But, you know, it hurt, but we fixed it. And for the next one, we're not going to make that same mistake again. And of course, the real owning up to it is making sure that Assassin's Creed Syndicate is pristine when it comes out on October 23rd, right? But I do think that there's something of a, you know, at a company, when you always want to avoid any kind of anything that would reflect negatively on you, especially for a company that is as huge as Ubisoft and as, you know, that has as much riding on those big titles for shareholders as Ubisoft. And having worked in PR, I can tell you that this is a cardinal rule of PR. It's a very tough call to actually bring the conversation back on a dark portion of your history as a company.
That's a very good point,
And I think that if they hadn't done it, there would have been snickering on the entire internet. You know, it would have been part of the conversation. So being courageous enough to actually own up to it allows them, and of course that's why they did it, allows them to control the message that is traveling around that particular issue when inevitably they have to announce their next game.
Yeah.
So, but I do think it is a very difficult decision, and I think they handled it well. I think they handled it respectfully and sincerely, however much, you know, however sincere a highly produced video, you know, presentation video can be for a big company. But
it
did resonate with me. Felt like, you know, something that too few companies do. They ignore the elephant in the room and it makes them come out as less sincere. I think in this case, it served Ubisoft well. Have I convinced you or are you still queasy about it?
Yeah, no, you have convinced me. I think that it definitely, it understanding that them saying, hey, we messed this up is definitely saying like we messed up and that's not good for the shareholders because the shareholders be like, oh, you guys messed up and you're agreeing that you did. So
yeah,
I agree with you there. I do think that, and I think that them controlling the message is definitely, I think I would have rather they apologized outside of the marketing video because it's definitely but again, I understand that shareholders want that to be done so you can control the message.
Yeah, I think, well, honestly, I think if shareholders had, well, it has little to do with the shareholders themselves. They don't, you know, craft the message, but it's dangerous for the company to express itself that way.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the game, any little misstep they take in any announcement can reflect, can be reflected in the quotes, the shares movement. And so, but yeah, ultimately, I think it serves the company. And that's the big irony of all of this. Ultimately, I think when you do the right thing by your customers, I do think that in the long run, it serves your company and your shares and your value, be it delay a game to make it good when it comes out, be it develop, you know, leave enough time for development for the game, be it be straightforward with your customer base. It's, you know, a company like Valve or Blizzard that, or, you know, companies that take the time to polish their games and have a very conscious look at the economy of all of it. So they don't want one game to never come out and let developers run like artist developers run free forever and never release a product. Of course, you have to have economic considerations, but if you try and focus on the product and what's best for the product, everything else will follow. And I think that's a mistake that a lot of companies make. The mistake of trying to optimize for revenue and sometimes hurting the product, when actually, if you optimize for the product, you end up succeeding in revenue as well.
Yeah.
At least, you know, that's what I've seen happen over and over again.
So. And that's why, and that ties into this, another story about how the Syndicate's got no multiplayer. It allows some, multiplayer is a big thing for AAA developers. It allows to add to playtime and retention. And not having that shows they want to focus on making the single player of Syndicate a lot more focused, a lot more polished, and a lot nicer experience for the consumer, a much better product.
No, you're right. It's very telling that it has no multiplayer. It's kind of, I mean, there has been a conversation over the past few years of whether or not we do need multiplayer in every single one of our games, but you know that there is going to be some people, you know, we were talking about this in the when I was talking about Dragon Age, and how I wasn't a big fan of Inquisition. I understand it has huge qualities, but it felt like a game that had as many boxes ticked as possible. And multiplayer in a current AAA game, multiplayer is one of those boxes, and you want to have it ticked because that's what big AAA games do nowadays. Yep. So them saying, you know what, we don't want the multiplayer to be in because it's going to distract from the focus we have for our game. Again, I think it shows a little bit of it's not like, it's not you're throwing yourself into the unknown. It's not the most incredibly courageous decision ever, but it's, again, a step in the right direction and something that makes me think that the people at Ubisoft are actual human that learn about their mistakes and that want to make a good game. And with all this, I'm still not sure that Syndicate is going to be something that's going to get my interest. But, you know, the promise of Assassin's Creed is always something that is seducing.
But yeah,
the execution, we...
But I've personally not played an Assassin's Creed game since Black Flag came out, and I do like the universe, so I would... I think I'll... And I'm English. It'd be nice to see Victorian London. I think, based on what they're saying, I won't pre-order it, but I'll definitely pay more attention to this, seeing that they've owned up to the problems of Unity. It's been 2 years... 3 years now since PS... the new console released?
It's the second year now.
Yeah. So yeah, 2 years since the consoles came out, I'm willing to give this more of a chance now, seeing how they're approaching it.
Mm. Yeah, and I mean the Victorian London, I mean seeing Paris in Assassin's Creed Unity was half the fun for me. It was so amazingly rendered, so amazingly beautiful. And I played it after, you know, like a few weeks after the initial release, so it was fixed by then. But it was so pretty, so pretty. So yeah, we'll see. Good old Games Galaxy. You're an indie gamer type person. Surely
yes.
You jumped on
yes.
GOG Galaxy.
Yes, I'm actually looking at my library right now in GOG Galaxy. I like it a lot.
Yeah? So yeah. GOG, for those who don't know, Good Old Games is a service that sells you DRM-free, entirely DRM-free games on your PC. And they are usually, they used to be focused on good old games, so it was older games. But you can do anything with them. You can, you know, copy the files. You can install them on 15 different computers. You can give them to your friends. Well, you're not supposed to, but you can. And they came out with the GOG Galaxy, which is their desktop client. It just came out in open beta. And anyone can go and request a key. You get it after a couple of days. It's you know, Spartan. It's still very, very new. It's being unwrapped, and many of the functionalities, if not all of the functionalities, aren't there. But I don't know. What do you think?
So I've never been like I use Steam a lot because it's where I get sent indie review codes and it's where all my games are. And I've always said that I want Steam to have a competitor and a big competitor that people are going to have to choose between. So not Origin or Uplay, but something that is going to make Steam think about the way they handle themselves. And right now, GOG Galaxy is looking to do that. So it's really simple to manage. You have access to everything. It's entirely optional, which is very important to me. So I don't have to use this client ever. I can still use the website, which is really nice.
And install your games and launch your games individually. Yeah.
Yes. And it's really light as well. It doesn't feel intrusive. It's very, very easy to use. And also one of the biggest things to me is, and I'm sure that you felt this as well, Patrick, is that in the EU, we don't get charged fairly for price for games. Like a US a game that's $10 will be like £8 here, which isn't quite fair price wise. So good old games.
Welcome to socialism and
absolutely.
To socialist Europe. We
absolutely.
Have more taxes and we have more, and that's usually why it's a little bit more expensive if you do the conversion. But
yeah.
You know, on the other hand, we get free education and healthcare.
We do.
But that's another debate.
Good old games are saying that it's fair price, so everything will be, it's not $1 to £1, it's always going to be converted.
Mm.
I like it. And I also like that a lot is going to have, I mean, I don't care about that it's DRM free. I'm never going to send someone a game, but I like having full control of my games.
Yeah.
You know, like I paid I didn't pay $40 for The Witcher because I got it with my graphics card. But had I paid £40 for The Witcher, I want to have full control over that.
Mm.
And I can download this, stick on my external hard drive, and I've got it forever.
You know, it's, yeah, that's definitely one of the appeal of the, oh, I can't connect to Steam. What's happening? That is strange. I was going to check the I was going to check the price for The Witcher on the Steam store, because I think
£40.
I think it's the same price on Steam and on Good Old Games.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's €49 in on Steam and €49 on Good Old Games. So on that front, it's the same thing. But yeah, I think the DRM thing is nice. It's good to have that choice. Personally, I'm kind of wedded to Steam. It's just nice to have everything on on one interface, one place. It's nice. And I think, as silly as that might be, if I get The Witcher on PC, which I probably won't, because of a whole bunch of reasons I'm not going to get into, but of course, PC is my platform of choice. I'm a PC Master Race person, but I love old games. But I would still get it on Steam, I think, just because I like having everything in one place. And but that being said, I love that there is competition, as you were saying. Even beyond that, I think we need competition.
Yes.
Steam is way too dominant as a platform on PC, and it's not healthy for an industry. So, yeah, I welcome the rise of Good Old Games, and I hope that it does get a little bit more, you know, dominance or presence in the gaming industry. That being said, I don't see a lot of publishers play with a DRM-free player of the industry.
Yes. I mean, so Volition, is it Volition? No, who won't? Deep Silver, sorry, have just added like Darksiders and Darksiders 2 and the Saints Row series to Good Old Games. Sorry, Saints Row 2 and Saints Row the 3rd, so they haven't added Saints Row 4 yet. But, I mean, I think this is that old conversation of like, if you trust the consumer, they're less likely to pirate. I know it's not something that is entirely foolproof, but someone that wants to pay you money for something will use it fairly if you trust them. Like DRM typically doesn't hurt a pirate. It will hurt a player. It will hurt a legitimate customer. And in the case of Good Old Games, I feel like, I don't have any statistics about this up, but the majority of people using it aren't sharing games with people.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Maybe. But the thing is, if your games are going to be pirated anyway.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Old games are available on torrent sites very easily. Mm-hmm. I still don't think it's going to be enough to convince the people who own the rights to put their games on Good Old Games, but I think there is a place in today's market for Good Old Games as a second or third window for a game. When it's, you know, a couple of years old, you know, 2 or 3 years old, it's been, you've sold as many of them as you could sell, you know, on all the consoles and Steam and, you know, whatever your own service that you have, be it Origin or Uplay or whatever other proprietary service, you might think, you know, there is a portion of the players who are using Good Old Games Galaxy, and I want to cater to those players as well, so I'm going to put it in there, maybe a little bit less expensive or whatever, and it's another outlet for your game and for you to be able to make money. And as that happens, if Good Old Games manages to grab a portion of the audience, I could see how down the line publishers might start thinking about maybe using a DRM-free policy.
Yeah.
Down the line, you know, but definitely not right now.
Oh, no. Yeah, especially when you have people like Ubisoft and EA using extra DRM on top of Steamworks, like using Uplay. I mean, I'm not, as I said, I'm not overly concerned about the lack of DRM. I'm mostly supporting Galaxy for the competition. I've always said that I want Steam's customer support to be better, and I want Steam to be, I want to be able to make my own branches. I want to be able to use, I wouldn't be able to make my own, but I want people to be able to make their own versions of the Steam client.
And well, good luck with that.
Yeah, but Good Old Games recently put up a poll saying, hey, do you guys want us to make this open source and making Galaxy so you can make your own branches of it and change it? And I like that.
Yeah, definitely. And also, by the way, Good Old Games and CD Projekt are very close. I believe it's the same investors, the same, it's, you know, the same company-ish, or at least the same owners.
CD Projekt owns CD Projekt. I think CD Projekt Red are the guys that own CD Projekt.
That is a little bit too specific for me. I know that they're definitely the same bunch.
Yeah,
and it shows when you look at the first thing that you see on Good Old Games is The Witcher 3, obviously, which you can buy immediately. And you know, it's the Polish developer that developed all of this. I'm trying to Google at the same time. Now you sort of put me on the on the spot.
CD Projekt is the capital group, and they own CD Projekt Red and then Good Old Games.
And Good Old Games. There you go. Right. So it is definitely something that they tried to rush to market to make sure that it was available for the release of The Witcher 3, which honestly, unless you're an idiot like me, there is no reason to buy The Witcher on Steam. You should definitely get it on Good Old Games. And I actually, you know what? I think I might. I don't know.
I think it doesn't make much of a difference. I know that actually the version you get on The Witcher on Good Old Games, you get more content with it. Like you get the extras, so you get the like wallpapers and soundtrack and HD videos for free. I know that on the Steam version you don't get everything, you just get the artwork and the wallpapers, whereas the Good Old Games version you get the comics, you get the soundtrack, you get HD videos, you get paper toys. Extras come with it with the Good Old Games version.
Well, there you go. One more reason to go with Good Old Games. And talking about The Witcher, holy moly, is it getting good reviews?
Yes, yeah. Amazing reviews.
That's pretty... It was such a tall order, taking the world of The Witcher and making it open world.
Yeah.
All of the reviews have been done before release on PlayStation 4 hardware. And there are a couple of glitches here and there, but it seems very good. It's definitely not as pretty as the trailers led everyone to believe. Mm-hmm. It's pretty. It's not mind-blowingly pretty, but it's shaping up to be a great game. And I think so. Because I'm going to be traveling, I'm going to be taking my PS4 with me. I think I'm going to get it on PS4, basically.
Okay.
After the show ends, I'm actually going to go and go to my local store and try to get them to sell it to me before the date of tomorrow, which is the date of. So you got it. You're ready to play it. Are you excited?
Yeah, I got it with my graphics card. I bought a 970 back in April, and I got it with that. And I'm, sitting here preloaded, ready to launch in 11 hours. They've got a countdown on the site, so launching in 10 hours. I'm very excited for this. I really enjoyed everything else in the Witcher series. I've read a couple of the books, and I'm very excited to play this.
I want to love it. Mm-hmm. I'm a little bit concerned.
Why are you concerned?
I don't know. It's. I've tried The Witcher 1 and it didn't stick. I've tried The Witcher 2
clunky.
And it didn't stick. So I don't know. And I almost got a 970, a GTX 970, but I'm going to be away from home for a few weeks. And so I figured I'll get it when I come back. But by then, you know, they have a promotion with The Witcher and Batman Arkham Origins, Arkham Knight.
Yeah.
And both of them are going to be out when I come back. So
yeah,
I don't know. Anyway,
I just missed them adding Arkham Knight to my to the package. I was really annoyed because I know I'm going to play that as well, and I missed it by like three or 4 days.
Oh, you only got one day?
I only got
one
yeah.
game.
Yeah, I only got The Witcher because I bought it like 4 days before Batman. Yeah.
Huh. Oh, really they annoyed. Added Batman.
Yeah, so it was originally just The Witcher 3, and then like midway through April, they added Batman as well. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, The Witcher seems great, and we will report on it on the next show. I'm sure we'll have played it. I'm going to buy it for sure. It seems like one of the games you really can't miss this year. So I'll get it and we'll see.
Yeah.
All right. Results and revenue. There's a bunch of stuff happening with, well, not happening. There were the results for all of the companies in the world, but more specifically for gaming companies. We're not going to go over every single little bit of detail because there's a bunch, but let's pluck out the specifically interesting announcements that came out of all of that. First with EA, they've gone back to huge benefits. They basically last year they made $7 million benefits dollars, and this year it's $875 million. So,
wow!
Well done, EA.
Blimey.
Yeah, and DLC is steadily increasing as a part of the revenue. It's now almost $1 billion in revenue for this year. So if you're complaining about DLC, then stop buying it. Because no one is apparently stopping buying it. Mirror's Edge 2 is coming out in early 2016. However, Titanfall 2 will not be coming out before Q2 2016. Which one of those are you excited for the most?
That's a really difficult question because I was one of the few people that really enjoyed Titanfall. Mirror's Edge 2, I know I'll definitely play. Titanfall 2, I would say Mirror's Edge 2 I'm more excited for.
Which one, sorry?
Mirror's Edge I'd be more excited for.
Okay. I've enjoyed both of those games,
yeah.
Actually. And they were both, I think, Mirror's Edge was a great game period. Titanfall was a huge potential that didn't pan out.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm excited about both of them. I think I can imagine what Titanfall 2 would be, and that is easier for me to get excited about. But I'm hoping we're going to see more of Mirror's Edge 2 at E3. And honestly, Mirror's Edge was sort of a neat trick, a neat gimmick, which I do worry a little bit that Mirror's Edge 2 can only be the same thing, only somewhat prettier, but not really because it's so conceptual artistically that it's kind of the same. But we'll see. Maybe I'm going to be surprised. Maybe it's going to be, you know, mind-blowing VR stuff. And yeah, we'll see. Ubisoft is doing well. The Division is delayed to Q1 2016, so it won't be coming out in 2015. They have more AAA games that are not announced yet that will come out by fiscal year this year, which means March 2016. So that's exciting, potentially. I'm wondering what it could be, but I guess, again, we're going to be hearing a little bit more at E3. Activision is doing very well as well, and they confirmed the new Tony Hawk's game name, which is Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 5. I was never big into Tony Hawk, but you were.
I played a lot of Tony Hawk as a kid. I am excited.
All right, I guess there are some of you guys. It's not going to be the biggest read. It's not going to be as, let's put it like that, it's not going to be as big as it was back when it was big.
No. But it'd be like the Guitar Hero coming out. It's not going to be as big as it, but it's definitely going to get back those players that played it before.
Mm-hmm. Blizzard is having reached 30 million players in Hearthstone. That's big. Destiny, 20 million players. That's a lot of cards, and that's a lot of guardians in Destiny.
Is that active players, or is that just players?
No. Okay. That's players total. And I'm wondering if they're counting. I believe anyone who has actually engaged with the tutorial is counted as a player. It might be someone who has completed the tutorial. Not sure. But it could be people that have played, you know, for 2 hours and stopped. And for Destiny, it could be people that have played the demo, I suspect. You know, 20 million, they would have said, we have sold 20 million games of Destiny, 20 million Destiny. I don't think that's how they phrased it. So I suspect there might be some shenanigans happening there with the demo. Which is always a neat trick you want to keep your eye on. What else? 3 million players down for World of Warcraft. Basically, it went 7 million, 10 million, 7 million.
Yeah.
Which means it's on the same track, on the bell curve track, as it had been before the release of the latest expansion. It won't be very surprising. Well, I think 3 million is a huge number.
It is.
But when you think of it as... Well, it's always a huge number, no matter how you think of it. But, you know, when you think of it as the amount of people that came back to check the expansion and then left after a couple of months, it makes a little bit more sense.
Yeah.
So,
I was one of those people.
You were, and you stopped. Yeah. You stopped playing.
Sadly, I thought. I mean, I really enjoyed the leveling experience, but I felt like it wasn't. I felt like I feel like I'm done with MMOs in general. So, but yeah, I mean, it definitely shows that it was people came back for what World of Adrenaline was supposed to be and then felt like it didn't really change what WoW was and then they left again. So it's good that it's staying stable and it hasn't dipped further, really.
Yeah, for sure. It's, I think there is a market for those. It's a game that those players enjoy and I'm one of them. But it's definitely not going to keep. To get back to where it was, it's going to keep dwindling probably. And 7 million is still a huge amount of people. It's by far the biggest MMO. But it's true. I guess players have moved on to things like MOBAs and free-to-play games is huge. And and that's where I think Blizzard, and anytime I talk about Blizzard, I should do the disclaimer that I used to work for Blizzard. But... they've been very clever about how they've approached the transition from WoW. They worked on what we suppose was an MMO, and they decided it didn't really work. And because the market is not where it was, they didn't find the formula to make WoW 2, basically. However different or sci-fi or FPS-like it would have been. So they decided not to release another MMO and instead go with other types of games. All of their new projects seem to be free-to-play games. We don't have the model for Overwatch yet, their FPS, but I would be surprised. I would be shocked if it wasn't a free-to-play game. Maybe it won't be, but we'll see. And so they have a bunch of games and they're operating the transition well and keeping WoW alive as long as they can with good content added to the game. But so I think I'm not very worried about Blizzard, I guess.
No, definitely not.
Nintendo is making money!
Yay! Woohoo! It's good.
Yay! So that's they're really making good. A little bit of money, $200 million dollars. And that's the first time since 2011. So it's good. It's however, on they're making money on games, not on consoles. They're selling a lot of amiibos. I don't think it's doing huge amounts to their bottom line, but it's a lot of... it's especially in North America that they're selling. So I guess, you know, it's an American thing to go hunt for collectibles.
Yeah, to be honest, I haven't seen that many amiibos outside of game here. Like, I haven't seen any in any other store.
You mean the store game?
The store game, yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't seen
them elsewhere. They were saying it's basically the US and Canada where 2/3 of the demand is coming from.
Jeez.
So, that's Americans and Canadians. Those are for you. And I still don't get what's the point of all of this. But, you know, whatever.
Yep.
Mobile games for Nintendo, they said a little bit more about their schedule. They're going to release, as we knew, the first one, their first mobile game by 2015, the end of the year. And then, in total, they will have 5 games by March 2017. So that comes to about 1 every 3 or 4 months. And I think that's a pretty reasonable rate. And I think... Yeah. For mobile games, I'm hopeful that they can make really high quality product.
Yes, I mean, that shows they're not churning them out. That shows they're approaching them as they would a typical game. I mean, one right. every 4 months is what they do with their AAA games, is what they do with their 3DS games. So it definitely shows they're not approaching them as throwaway titles, and I like right. that.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's very, it's a very positive way of looking at all of this. I guess the one drawback is that they did mention, you know, we don't want to go chase we don't want to go the traditional. It's not a drawback, but I think it's them being a little bit wide-eyed and unrealistic about how free-to-play games work. They do want to make them free-to-play. In their language, it's free-to-try, which is more honest.
Yeah.
But they want to have as they want to design the games for as many people as possible to be interested in buying elements of the game and not chase the whales in the free-to-play market. Basically, not design the games so that people will come in and the ones who want to pay a lot of money will be able to spend, you know, hundreds and hundreds and thousands of dollars on their games. And I really hope they manage to make it. And I think there is a way of doing it. If you look at, again, talking about Blizzard, if you look at Hearthstone, it's a mm-hmm. game where a lot of people feel good about purchasing something in the game and they don't have to buy a huge amount of things, but you know, you're perfectly it's perfectly okay to buy a little bit and you don't feel bad about not buying it and you don't feel bad about buying it.
Absolutely.
But I don't know if it's possible to do on, you know, 5 different games. It's, I don't know. Maybe
so
it
I actually
is. I hope
bought
so.
A free to try Nintendo game last night.
Did you buy Pushmo?
Yes, Stretchmo? I did. I bought Stretchmo.
Right.
And I like the way they've handled it so far. And if they handled the mobile games the same way, I can see it being very successful.
So basically, it's packs. It's you have
yes.
what amounts to a demo, and yeah. then you can buy level packs or all of the packs for $10, right?
Yes, yeah. So, yeah, you play like the first 7 levels like a welcome pack, which teaches you the mechanics of the game in the tutorial. Then it gives you the option to buy like 4 different sections, each with 100, I think it was 100 levels in the first pack and then 50 in the others. And each of those was like, it was £4 for the first one and £2 for the others, or £8 for all of them. It worked really well. I thought, I liked it. I thought it was a very honest approach to free-to-play games. It was like, you can't play the rest of the game, but we're going to give you a demo. If you want to keep playing it, you can buy it piecemeal. Yeah, if they do their mobile games like that, it'll work.
Yeah, I agree. There is definitely a way. The issue with that kind of model, though, is that you're not letting people who want to give you more money give you more money. And I think that's maybe there are going to be games like this and games like the more traditional route of free-to-plays, and maybe they're going to try and see what happens. But my fear is that they realize they're making so much more money on the whale hunting games mm-hmm. that they end up, you know, after a couple of years, maybe focusing a little bit more on those. But I hope, you know, I have faith in Nintendo. I think they are they are game designers at heart.
Yeah.
And I don't think they will be, maybe they're going to start making games like that as well, but they're always going to have an avenue and an audience with games that are a little bit less about the gambling, as we were saying earlier mm-hmm. in the show, and more about the gameplay experience. So
absolutely.
They're going to have rides at Universal theme parks.
Awesome.
Is it?
Yes. I'm looking forward to the eventual Mario Sunshine Flume ride.
Yeah, I'm not a big, you know, ride guy. So
me neither.
Oh, okay. All right. So you were being sarcastic.
Definitely. I mean, I don't see any problem with this. I mean, there's Harry Potter rides in Universal Studios. I think it's, you know, any way mm-hmm. that I can experience more Nintendo stuff is good. And it's a way for them to make more money.
Yeah. Yeah. Why not? Why not? I'm not against it. It's just, it's like the Amiibos. It's not necessarily for me.
Exactly. But, yeah.
Yeah. There is going to be, for the first time in 25 years, World Championships, the Nintendo World Championships at E3. And awesome. Yeah, I guess if you don't have anything new to announce, just do something else, like a kind of esports thing. Why not?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, like, they've been building goodwill in Evo recently, and it'll be a good way for them to you know, get people to play their games.
It's, you know, it's telling that they were mentioning in their calls that the games that have been performing really well are the games that they got people to come back to, and that have on multiplayer components and added content on a regular basis. And I think that's Nintendo discovering the power, the staying power of games that nurture their community on the long tail. So that's good. That's always good. And it's nice that Nintendo is embracing it.
Yes.
Capcom has doubled its profits. Woohoo! Street Fighter V is going to be released by March 2016. That's a confirmation of a leaked piece of information we had. I'll be looking forward to that very eagerly. Bandai Namco is making lots of money, and Konami is getting more money as well because of all their evil, you know, gambling and mobile games and what was it? The other section is not making so mm-hmm. much money, the sports centers. But, you know, whatever. Konami has lost me, and mm-hmm. I'll be going with Iga and his Igavania Bloodstained, and yep. we'll see what Kojima does, how he resurfaces. You know, I would love for Kojima to get out as with a new project at E3 this year with another publisher. It would be awesome.
Didn't Del Toro said that he was still open to working with Kojima?
Yes. Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, they were ready to go. They were stopped in their tracks. It was a tragedy. I'm sure, you know, I would not be surprised at all if Kojima ended up, you know, walking on stage as a surprise at the, let's say, Microsoft event.
Yeah.
Because Microsoft needs a win, and
yes.
they would, you know, they would pay. They go, I can see Microsoft going to Kojima after the announcement that he was sacked from Konami. Microsoft saying, Mr. Kojima, how much money do you want? We will give you that money, and you come make a game for us. I
yes.
could absolutely see it.
Yes. Yeah. Microsoft exclusive Kojima game.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And Kojima plus Del Toro taking some kind of ownership of a project they had before and renaming it, as we were saying last time, I could see it happening. E3 is going to be exciting.
It
honestly,
is, yeah.
It's always exciting. But and so I'm going to try and do something. I might try and stream comments on the show. We were talking with Scott. Maybe we can do something. We'll mm-hmm. see. But I think it's going to be... It's the first year I'm actually a professionally paid podcaster. Mm-hmm. And I want to do something about E3.
Yeah.
I've been wanting to do things about... Mm-hmm. That huge event in our industry, which I love, which I was saying last time, it's kind of my Super Bowl, you know,
mm-hmm. it's yes.
the thing that I wait for the entire year. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. Maybe we'll do some commentary streaming or something. We'll see. But mm-hmm. it's going to be exciting. All right. A bunch of smaller, quicker news. We were talking about about pre-sales and DLC last time, and saying that there is literally no reason for pre-ordering a game anymore. Well, The Witcher 3 pre-sold 1 million copies. I guess digitally, it gets you a significant saving, you save like 17% currently in France, at least?
Yeah, if you own The Witcher 1 and 2, you get 5% off each, and then you get 10% off on top of that for pre-ordering.
Nice. Well, yeah. In France, even if you don't own anything, you pay $50 instead of $60. So okay. In that case, you know, The Witcher 3 is probably a safe bet. I think pre-ordering it, if you enjoy those types of games, especially now that we've seen the reviews a few days before the release of the game itself, I think it's safe to pre-order this one.
And then just for this you one. Get to preload it as well.
Yeah, as well. And by the way, on Xbox, it's going to have dynamic scaling, which is an interesting way of getting around the supposed issue with less power on the Xbox One than on the PS4. It's going to dynamically switch between 900 and 1080p for depending on the game's complexity. I think that's pretty neat. That's a nice way of doing it.
Yeah.
If you can't have 1080p all the time. And by the way, maybe the first day one patch is going to fix this, but all of the reviews were noting that the PS4 version was having trouble staying at 30 images per second. So 30 FPS was already difficult on PS4. I'm guessing it's going to be, you know, hopefully the patch fixes that, but we'll see. Hey, James.
Yeah.
Did you want to play more Candy Crush Saga?
Sure, yeah.
Well, it will come pre-installed on Windows 10,
so
you can play as much as you want.
Wonderful.
I loved that title by Ars Technica. The article is titled, "Humanity Weeps as Candy Crush Saga Comes Pre-Installed with Windows 10."
Do you think Candy Crush is going to go away like the way that Angry Birds did, or do you think it has too much of a presence now?
No, I think it's going to go away. I think even more than this. Well, Angry Birds hasn't gone away yet. They sold so much. It's not like they have. They're making less money now, but they haven't managed to renew their successes, which is what, by the way, Iwata was talking about with when he was announcing Nintendo's arrival on mobile. He was saying all of the developers for mobile games are one-hit wonders, and it was the case with Angry Birds, and honestly, I think it's the case with Candy Crush Saga. They have successes here and there, but the big one is Candy Crush Saga. I think it's going to go away. It's not going to go away now. It's not going to go away soon, but I don't see King, which is the developer for Candy Crush, making another one that is that as big as this. Maybe I'll be wrong, and certainly they have a bright future ahead of us with Candy Crush as it comes pre-installed with Windows 10. But yeah, Humanity Weeps is kind of my
I
don't know what if you could choose one game to bundle with Windows 10, and realistically, you know, a game that could be bundled, not The Witcher 3, you know, it's not a game that everyone would like to play. Is there a game you could think of that could fill that casual gaming need for any Windows 10 user that wouldn't be looked down on by the gaming community?
So something like the Solitaire and FreeCell that already come bundled?
Yeah, but like actual games.
It would have to be something like this. I would say
it's hard,
I'm gonna have
isn't
to think
it?
On that. Yeah, I might have to respond at the end when we're done. I'm gonna have to think.
All right, let's try and listeners, come on Twitter or on the site at frenchspin.com. If you can think of a game that would be better suited than Candy Crush, I think it's perfectly suited, actually, Candy Crush. It's the perfect game to include in Windows 10, but one that would perform the same function but leave less of a queasy feeling in our stomachs.
Is it the free-to-play version of the game, or is it the full game?
Oh, I'm sure it's the free-to-play version.
Yeah, that makes me feel weird. But if it was the full game, I think that'd be fine. Mm. It's just like, I've had a computer come with Bejeweled installed before. It's the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Hmm. Maybe a Nintendo game. Maybe Stretchmo, but, you know, it's on PBS. But Microsoft, we talked about the Gears of War thing. There was a leaked video that basically confirmed the game was coming, and that's one of the games we're going to have announced at E3 for sure. But they did something interesting. They banned the Xbox Live accounts, and in the process, so basically it was gamers testing the game, and they were under NDA, under non-disclosure agreement, and they uploaded their videos of the game to a service that basically leaked it. And it was a friend who sent it to a friend who didn't know it was basically, anyway, a couple of people got their accounts banned, which bricked their Xbox Ones.
Oh.
I think they're going to get, well, it's not that they're bricked. It's that they can't use them until Microsoft decides what they want to do with the accounts. I guess they're going to have some penalty. Maybe they're going to be banned for a little bit. But yeah, anyway, good news. Gears of War remake confirmed.
Woo-hoo. Yep. The remakes, oh, no, this isn't. We don't have time to get into it, but the remakes are starting to scare me a little bit.
Yeah, me too, a little bit. It's like, it's Gears of Wars I loved when I, yep. That's the reason I got my Xbox 360. I think I was mentioning it this last episode, but it's still, you know, almost 10 years old now.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how well it will play if it's just a graphical overhaul and the gameplay is exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had so many remakes now.
Yep.
That's one, by the way, during the presentation, I really hope they allude to the issues with the Master Chief Collection, which itself is a remake of a very well-loved series of titles. Because if they don't, that's what the entire conversation is going to be about. Everyone is going to say, we hope they don't mess it up as much as they did MCC.
Yes.
Facebook's Oculus Rift is heading out our way Q1 2016. It's going to be upwards of $200, but not a lot much higher. I could see $250. Would you be getting one?
I reckon if I could afford it, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, it's something you would chill out.
I would use it for things like Elite Dangerous, Star Citizen, like games that I want to be fully immersed with. I could do.
I would go farther. I will definitely get one if I manage to get the assurance that it works for me, which it doesn't in its current iteration. I just feel like I have a screen 2 centimeters from my eyes, and that, you know, I don't see the 3D. It's just one screen. But hopefully with the newer devices, the newer iterations, it fixes a lot of the, you know, the lag so that you don't get seasick, a lot of that. And hopefully it works for more people that are 3D blind, I guess, 3D impaired, 3D vision impaired, and depth perception impaired to an extent, and that's my case. It's weird because I see depth. I don't have an issue with depth perception in the real world, but with 3D things, it doesn't work as well as it should. It works a little bit, so I'm hopeful that if they fix it, it works. But my point is, if it works for me, I so want to be in it as we explore whether or not it works. Yes. I am not convinced at all that it will work and that there will be lots of uses that will work with this, you know, with this thing. It might be that we all put it on, we all buy it, and after 3 months or a year, we realize, well, it's kind of fun for 10 minutes. It's okay for Elite Dangerous, as you were saying, for certain types of games, but it really doesn't lend itself to wider applications in gaming or maybe outside of gaming. I don't think it's likely that that's going to happen, but it's possible. But I want to find out. I want to be downloading games and trying them out and downloading different applications, you know, like the different things that the guys are going to be thinking about outside of just gaming. And I want to be there. So a year away, it's coming.
Yeah.
And by the way, good choice on that GTX 970, because that is the recommended hardware that they listed.
I think the recommended hardware there is quite reasonable for what they're trying to do.
Well, it's definitely, it's not going to be, you know, your average laptop.
No,
It's you know, it's interesting what people call reasonable depending on their approach of gaming.
Yes.
The graphics card that you're talking about, the GTX 970 or the AMD 290, it's a piece of hardware that costs upwards of $300. It's $350. Yeah. It's basically the price of an entire gaming console. And you need to add everything else around the PC.
Yeah, it's so, not cheap.
Yeah. I think a PC that can be used reasonably with an Oculus is a $800 to $1,000 rig.
Yeah. But that, I think that makes sense, because the people that want to use an Oculus Rift are the PC gaming enthusiasts that are going to have that rig.
Right. Yeah, you know? No, absolutely. It does make sense. And I think a year after the release, the hardware you need is going to be a little bit, because this is the bare minimum. They spent a lot of time going into the details of what you need, the type of calculations you need to perform to have decent images on the Oculus Rift. And we are just now, power-wise, able to create that kind of these kinds of graphics, because it would be, anyway, so a year down the line, if you're not really into this, wait until 2017 for sure.
Yeah.
And by then it's going to be a little bit more affordable. I'm sure the device itself will have improved and it's going to be less expensive, and more PCs will be able to do that. So.
Yep.
The Void is kind of a VR thing.
Oh, man.
Are you excited about this? I can't decide whether it's complete bullcrap or whether I'm excited.
So I am excited, but just because I can imagine going to Nerdtacula and being like, hey guys, let's go down to the Void for an afternoon and let's take a couple of beers and let's shoot aliens as a group.
So the Void is basically a giant warehouse where they install a set that has only the physical elements. It's basically, it has hallways and console monitors and doors and stuff, but all of them are just gray stuff. It's just walls. And then you put on a VR headset and you walk around, and the graphics are overlaid on reality, meaning that if you extend your arm and try to touch the wall that you see in your headset, you actually end up touching the wall that is physically present in that set.
Yes.
And I think that's a cute idea. I think it's going to be very difficult to actually implement well. But maybe it's possible. I mean, the amount of things you need the tracking to be perfect for everyone involved and no lag, and the device to be portable and to be portable enough that, you know, you can create the graphics. You need to have a PC strapped on your belt, basically, that is linked to your VR headset.
Yeah.
It seems like a big problem. And even then, once you actually do it, I mean, yes, it could be fun, the first one is going to be built in Salt Lake City, which is why you were mentioning Nerdtacular.
Yeah.
It won't be available for this Nerdtacular, unfortunately, but
I mean, the weight thing, I think about it like, if you're going paintballing, you're carrying a heavy gun and a backpack, you know? You're going into this kind of thing for realism, I would say, and so having to carry around a little bit of weight, to me, doesn't bother me.
Hmm.
I mean, it is obviously something that I would rather not happen, but it's not something that I wouldn't do it for.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's not just about the weight. It's everything, you know? There are so many challenges into making this vision into reality. But maybe, we'll see. I'll put it on the side as, you know, let's look at it again in a year and see if it has gone anywhere at all, except, you know, the forgotten realms of forgotten projects that were silly to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
It could be great for you know, team events for companies, instead of going karting or paintballing or wine tasting, which, you know, can have its interesting as well. You could just do that, and that would be fun.
But team building this week, we're going to be fighting zombies.
That can work.
Yeah.
All right, last fun story. H1Z1 players are afraid of the dark. That made me laugh. It's really funny. So H1Z1 is one of those survival games with zombies, as there are many of them. And the data suggests that when the game's cycle shifts from day to night, apparently players log out in droves, which is, you know, because they're actually afraid of playing when it's dark.
Yep.
Because the game is more difficult and more scary. So, I don't know, that made me laugh.
Yeah.
There could be a lot of other reasons why they would log out. Maybe it's actually more difficult and they don't want to have to deal with it. Or maybe, I don't know. But I chose to read it as actually the title of the article, which is H1Z1 players are afraid of the dark and they're big sissies. All right. Bunch of other things we're not going to discuss because we've already gone a little bit long. And you know what? I'm getting excited about E3.
Yeah.
I'm very excited about the fact I'm finally going to be able to comment on it.
Yeah, this will be the first E3 that I'm going to be here for, not traveling. So I'm very excited to watch it and take part in it.
That's very cool. So have you ever gone there?
No, I my goal is to be out there for 2016, but it nice. All depends on how the next couple of months go. Fingers crossed.
All right, I'll cross my fingers as well. Honestly, I don't even think I would want to go there anymore. You know, I'm over 40. I've done a bunch of... I've never gone to E3 specifically, but I've done a bunch of gaming shows in France, in Japan, in the US. I think I'm perfectly fine following it from the comfort of my home and watching the presentations in much greater comfort than the people who are actually there. I don't get to try the games, but it's, you know, I get to watch the videos. So,
you know,
I'm
mentioning
happy doing
that, I think I would rather go to Gamescom in Germany.
To be able to play the games?
Yeah, I've never been to Germany, and I feel like it's a lot closer. Obviously, just pop on the train in London and go to, I guess, Gamescom's in Munich, but get on the train from London to Berlin. And then
it's in Cologne.
Is it? Oh, it's in Cologne. So yeah, there's a train that goes there.
Well, there you go.
Hey, Gamescom's
why don't you go? Well, I guess you need to apply for it, but you could go this year.
I could do, yeah.
Ooh. Great. See, think tank. We have ideas.
Yeah.
All right. That's going to be it for us for this episode. Before we go, James, where can people find you?
People can find me on Twitter at Iagovos. That's IYAGOVOS. And on YouTube at youtube.com/Iagovos, as well as indielove.com, where I run an indie game site.
Excellent. Thank you very much, sir. For me, it's not Patrick on Twitter. I will be also available on, well, I am available on Facebook, not Patrick as well there. And there is the site, frenchspin.com, where you can come and comment on this show, find other shows that are good and fun as well. And I guess that's it. We'll be back in about a couple of weeks. We'll be right at the doors of E3 at that point. And of course, after that next show, we will have a show for E3 itself, summarizing everything you need to remember. And we might have some streaming, as I was saying, streaming commenting of the events as they occur. I'm excited about that. We'll see if we can make it happen. That's it for us. We will talk to you again in a couple of weeks. Thanks for listening. See you soon. Bye.
Bye.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.